This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Among the things I got to learn was that they were listening to my calls and having a copy of all the WhatsApp chats and many other things, following my location every time.
That's Ugandan musician and politician Bobby Wine on claims that Chinese telecom giant Huawei helped the government spy on him. Also, South African Airways has canceled hundreds of flights as two unions go on strike. Aid agencies have introduced a new campaign to encourage breastfeeding in West and Central Africa. A ruling by Botswana Appeals Court was a relief for more than 350,000 HIV patients. Well, those stories and a whole lot more, so stay with us. Our top story this hour, six heads of state from the Economic Community of West African States arrive in Guinea-Bissau tomorrow in an effort to stem the country's political crises. Guinea-Bissau President José Mário Vaz recently dismissed the country's prime minister and cabinet and installed a new government. However, his critics and ECOWAS leader say Vaz did not have the power to dismiss the government because his term officially ended on June 23rd. The country holds presidential elections on November 24th, and Vaz, who took office in 2014, is running for re-election. For nearly 5 years, Guinea-Bissau's government has been hampered by divisions between President Vaz and the ruling party, which controls the parliament. The country has experienced related episodes of political instability or coups since the 1970s. Journalist Ricky Shrylock is in the capital, Bissau, and spoke with my VOA colleague Kate Pound Dawson earlier. She starts off by talking about the ECOWAS mission and efforts to break years of stalemate in the Guinea-Bissau.
The ECOWAS delegation the military delegation arrived Thursday, I believe. And then the government leaders, the presidents from a few ECOWAS countries, including Guinea, Ivory Coast, Gambia, are arriving tomorrow because of this. They are arriving to repeat and deliver the message to current President Vaz. It was decided last week at the summit in Niamey that says that the government of Aristides Gomes, which was the one that was fired by Vaz a few weeks ago, is the one that is in charge. And let him know, kind of deliver the message that the regional body finds it very important that the elections go ahead on the 24th.
So now what comes next? Does it look like the elections will be held on time? And are there any fears, as you mentioned, there are soldiers on the streets. Are there any fears this could turn violent?
As of right now, it appears that the elections will be held on time, yes. The pressure from the international community is really strong, and the majority party, PNGC, is very, they want elections to happen. It feels to me, anyway, in the streets, that the citizens want elections to happen. Both, I've been in the capital and in some of the rural areas. Everybody seems quite tired of the stagnation. As for violence, I would not think so. There aren't usually violence around these types of things.
And that was reporter Ricky Shrylock in Guinea-Bissau. She was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. After spying assisted by Huawei employees, Ugandan politician Bobby Wine, a vocal critic of President Yoweri Museveni, takes elaborate steps to keep government spies at bay. VOA's Salim Solomon has that story.
On August 13, 2018, Bobby Wine was in campaign mode. The popular musician-turned-parliamentarian was attending a rally for Kassiano Wadri, a politician from Uganda's Arua region in the north of the country. There, Wine says government forces ambushed, arrested, and tortured him. On his Facebook page, Wine later shared his ordeal. Wine's driver, Yassin Kauma, was fatally shot during the violence that day. Wine, a vocal critic of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, is certain security forces knew where he would be and meticulously planned their attack.
Among the things I got to learn was that they were listening to my calls and having a copy of all the WhatsApp chats and many other things, following my location every time. I even learned that there, when I was arrested and brought lies in Arua, it was because of that technology that they got. They could listen to my phones, and they were tracking me. And I know that they follow me on my phone and know where I am and listen to my calls.
Reporting by the Wall Street Journal this summer confirms his claims and shows that Ugandan intelligence officials, with the help of employees of Chinese tech giant Huawei, hacked into Wine's WhatsApp and Skype accounts to monitor the dissident and his supporters. Wine told VOA he's now adapted a sophisticated routine to throw government spies off his trail using burner phones and old-fashioned code words.
What I've been doing to protect myself and the people that I communicate with is, one, to use coded language when I'm talking on the phone that is known. I've been forced to devise means of changing telephone numbers and telephone headsets constantly to keep them on the wrong track. And sometimes when I have to move to a place and I don't want to be followed by the regime, I'm forced to leave my phone behind or put my phone in a car that is going in a different region of the country while I'm going to another one. That alone is how I'm trying to maneuver to go around it.
Huawei, who helped build a large portion of Africa's cellular backbone, has been implicated in allegations of spying on African diplomacy on behalf of the Chinese government. Wine, who was born Robert Chagulani, says his first-hand experiences reveal the scope and sophistication of government-backed spying. The government's paranoia won't stop, Wine suggested, as long as they perceive him as a threat. And he has no plans to back down.
I always knew that the President Museveni's regime is so paranoid, so scared, and it is investing so much in spying on its political opponents. Although I had not known that they had gone to that level. But, you know, ever since I realized with their kind of impunity, I'm only trying to be conscious and trying to go around their efforts here and there.
Wadri, the candidate Wine campaigned for in 2018, won his seat in parliament. Now, Wine is gearing up for a new kind of campaigning after announcing this summer his intention to run for president in Uganda's 2021 polls. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Two unions at South African Airways went on strike today, forcing the cancellations of hundreds of flights and leaving travelers scrambling to find alternatives. The workers want pay raises and changes in an overhaul for the troubled state-owned airline that would include layoffs for about 950 employees, about a fifth of the staff. National unemployment is running at 29%. All domestic and international flights are canceled for today and tomorrow, though the airline said it hopes to resume international flights on Sunday. Another round of mediated negotiations are planned for tomorrow. South African Airways has warned that the strike endangers the future of the airline, but it is getting little sympathy from the finance minister, who said the country can't afford to subsidize money-losing state enterprises like SAA and utility Eskom. South African Airways has lost more than $1.8 billion over the past 13 years. Somalia's president says his government is under constant pressure to choose from among three rival Persian Gulf countries, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Qatar. The Somali government has tried to remain neutral despite having a good working relationship with Qatar. Analysts warn that the rivalry and competing security interests are having an impact on Somalia's politics and stability. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, better known as Farmaajo, wrapped up a four-day visit to Kenya Friday. While there, Farmajo addressed members of Nairobi's large Somali community and spoke about the challenges his administration is facing, especially from some Arab countries. He says, these days the Gulf states have joined the happenings in Somalia with its challenges. We are trying to keep them at bay so that at least the government can work and do something that people can touch in the short period it has got. The Gulf crisis began in 2017 when Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates cut diplomatic ties with Qatar. Their political and security rivalries have spilled over into the Horn of Africa. Zakaria Yusuf, a Somali analyst with the International Crisis Group, says the Gulf split is hurting Somalia. Yusuf says the problem caused by the Gulf state has brought disunity and affected the sovereignty of the Somali state. The disunity has made some Somali take sides on the Gulf crisis, and that has widened the rift between Somali people. Without seeking permission, the United Arab Emirates is constructing the port of Berbera and Bosaso. It is also ignoring the central government in Mogadishu. The UAE's construction of a military and commercial base in Berbera has become a source of tension between Farmajo's government and the authorities in the self-declared independent state of Somaliland. In 2017, the United Nations Monitoring Group for Somalia and Eritrea said constructing of the base may constitute a violation of the long-standing international arms embargo on Somalia. Farmajo also addressed the poor relationships between his government in Mogadishu and Somalia's federal regions. Farmajo said some regional presidents and foreign countries are competing with his government for power. He says the federal states have got presidents, they're looking powers like the ones of the central government, they want to form their military and constitution. He says if you don't get along with them, they can be used by other states to fight the government. Mumanzao is a governance and security expert. He says Somalia and its neighbors need stability to prosper.
That country has been in war for a long time. It is slowly stabilizing, and everybody would want in future to be involved in working together with such countries. It is not just the Gulf countries alone. The rest of the world is very much interested in a more stable Somalia.
Somalia is just 15 months away from its next national poll, when the government is planning to conduct a one-person, one-vote election for the first time. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
There was a collective sigh of relief for more than 350,000 HIV-positive patients in Botswana after the Court of Appeal ruled in favor of the government in a legal tussle over the supply of the life-prolonging antiretroviral drugs. From Gaborone, Botswana, Mkondisi Dube has more.
In January, Botswana's government was dragged to court by a major ARV supplier, citing irregularities in the awarding of a contract for the provision of the drugs. The company, Portfolio Pharmaceuticals, managed to win a ruling at the High Court halting the supply of ARVs until the resolution of the matter. The move sparked a countrywide shortage of the critical drug, which the government said had left thousands of lives at risk. On Friday, the country's Court of Appeal overturned the lower court's judgment in favor of the government. Widumelo Malata, who is HIV positive, says he's alerted by the court's decision, saying it has been a nightmare to get the drugs.
If I could tell you how I've been living for the past few months, it's really been devastating, because you can imagine I don't have as much funds to be able to travel back and forth to hospitals to get medication. I'm happy now that things will go back to normal.
In passing judgment, the president of the Court of Appeal, Ian Kebi, criticized the lower court's decision, saying it was a matter of life and death. The Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV Bonela director, Cindy Kelemi, says the case should serve as a reminder to the government to review its procurement processes.
One of the weaknesses we identified as an organization is that government had entered into an exclusive contract. In our view, we cannot enter into an exclusive contract if we are dealing with essential drugs such as ARVs.
Botswana's Minister of Health Permanent Secretary Ruth Maphorisa says vital lessons have been learned and supply processes will be reviewed.
In the long term, given the experiences that we have had as a ministry, we have a plan of ensuring that there's adequate supply at any given time, and it's a policy matter that we want to take a stand on.
Botswana has the third highest HIV prevalence in the world, but has been widely lauded for its effort to fight the scourge. The drawn-out case was threatening to reverse gains as some patients were reported to be in danger of skipping treatment. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. I'm Steve Miller, and at 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. South African Airways has canceled hundreds of flights as two unions go on strike. Aid agencies have introduced a new campaign to encourage breastfeeding in West and Central Africa, and a ruling by a Botswana appeals court was a relief for more than 350,000 HIV-positive patients. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, and the Child and Maternal Health Organization, Alive and Thrive, have introduced a new campaign to encourage breastfeeding for West and Central Africa. Mavis Okiri in Washington has more.
Currently, 7 out of every 10 babies in West and Central Africa receive liquids and food in addition to breast milk during their first 6 months of life, contributing to child malnutrition, illnesses, and even death. A recent UNICEF poll shows that 55% of young parents in 10 countries of West and Central Africa incorrectly believe that babies need water in the first 6 months of life. 45% of respondents thought that babies should be given something in addition to breast milk to grow strong and healthy. UNICEF and its partner, the Alive and Thrive organization, recently kicked off their Stronger with Breast Milk Only campaign in Abidjan to counter such misinformation. Natalia Licati is the senior social and behavior change advisor for Alive and Thrive. From her office in France, she said the campaign would help countries in West and Central Africa scale up efforts to achieve the global exclusive breastfeeding target of 50% by 2025. She says despite economic growth in West and Central Africa, the number of stunted children under 5 years has increased from 23 million in 2000 to 29 million in 2018. In addition, the region is home to an estimated 4.9 million children suffering from severe acute malnutrition.
When babies receive water, other liquids, or food, this actually exposes them to certain risks. Water and liquids and foods can carry germs that cause diarrhea or respiratory infection. When babies receive liquids and foods, in addition to breast milk, any liquid and food replaces the perfect and complete nutrition that breast milk provides, which means that they're not receiving the nourishment they need.
Licati says studies have shown that babies who receive breast milk only do better and have higher chances of survival. She says Alive and Thrive has recently published the global cost of not breastfeeding.
The Alive and Thrive estimates that globally each year, enabling women to practice breastfeeding according to WHO recommendations, which includes early initiation of breastfeeding, exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life, and continued breastfeeding up to 24 months of life, has the potential to prevent 700,000 child and maternal deaths and to save $341 billion costs in U.S. dollars in global economic in the prevention of global economic losses. So the costs of not breastfeeding are high.
She says another World Bank report shows that every dollar governments invest in comprehensive breastfeeding programs has a 35% return on investments. Likati calls on governments, partners, and businesses across West and Central Africa to make exclusive breastfeeding a public health priority to improve the health and prosperity of children and nations. She says governments should adopt and enforce laws to protect mothers so they can breastfeed, such as providing appropriate spaces and time in workplaces for women to nurse their children or pump milk. Reporting for the VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
UN agencies say early next year, several countries will begin testing a nuclear technique that sterilizes male mosquitoes to control the spread of dengue, Zika, and chikungunya to humans. Guidance for testing in countries has been developed by the Special Program for Research and Training in Tropical Diseases, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Food and Agricultural Organization, and the World Health Organization. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says diseases transmitted by mosquitoes account for 17% of all infectious diseases globally. It says every year, more than 700,000 people die from diseases such as malaria, dengue, Zika, chikungunya, and yellow fever. The WHO says dengue has increased dramatically in recent years due to factors such as environmental changes, urban sprawl, and transportation and travel, putting half the world's population at risk of catching the diseases. Jeremy Bouvet is a medical entomologist at the Joint Food and Agriculture Organization and International Atomic Energy Agency. He says a novel technique that uses radiation to sterilize male mosquitoes offers new opportunities for controlling disease. He describes the sterile insect technique as a form of insect birth control.
You release sterile males that will outcompete the wild males in the field, and they will induce sterility in the female so that their eggs will not hatch, and so you will control the next generation. And if you do that for a long time enough, you will be able to reduce and even in some cases eliminate the target population.
The technique was developed in the late 1950s by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and has been successfully used to control insect pests from attacking crops and livestock, such as the Mediterranean fruit fly. A pilot program that will start early next year will be the first time the sterile insect technique will be tested targeting human diseases. The countries where the trials will take place will be announced next year, although a few likely candidates reportedly include the United States, France, and Brazil. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Stay tuned next for the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thank you very much for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!